Hello, everyone, and welcome to Lag Radio here on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. My name is Marmar the Midboss, and I am your host of this wonderful radio show all about, well, very humble of me to say wonderful radio show. It's your weekly source of video game appreciation, chiptune, idolatry, super sweet giveaways, and so very much more. Every single week, we cover a different video game in depth. If somehow you're new to the show, this is episode 33, so you may or may not be, who knows. But so we basically cover a different video game in depth every single episode. And this week, we're not covering one game. No, we are covering two games, although one is kind of like a tech demo, so
that's what I think.
Yeah, exactly. Right, it's kind of like a game and a third or
yeah, when it came out it was awesome, but then once the second one came out it completely
yeah for sure. So the games that we're covering this evening, Portal and Portal 2, of course, from I guess originally it was a few people from Digipen. We're gonna get into this in the history, but yeah. It basically is Valve. It's all Valve all the time.
Back when Valve made games.
Yes.
Sad face. Back when Valve made games. I am joined in the studio this evening by my good friends Alex and Henry.
Yo.
We got our regulars up in the house. Except Brandon. No Brandon this evening. That's okay. We'll carry on without him. Why didn't he? Was he not interested in Portal?
He wasn't too familiar with the story, and I guess he knows the gameplay because we've been playing co-op a bit, but right. He doesn't know the single player elements very much or at all.
Oh, okay.
So he figured he wouldn't be too much of a help, except for maybe at that the multiplayer co-op aspect of it.
But that's the point of the show, is to play the game.
Exactly.
Well, I don't think he had it either. So
okay.
So I shared it with him. Yeah.
Gotcha.
He'll come over to my place to play.
Yeah.
Gotcha. All right. Well, we'll carry on without him in his stead. We're going to be talking, of course, about the history and development cycle of the game, probably more than anything else, because there are a lot of really cool stories and a lot of really cool just understanding how this game came to be, or both games really came to be. We're also going to talk about the storyline of the game and what there is. We're going to be talking about the storyline of the 1 and 2, of course. And this evening, because our show is shorter than the norm, we're actually going to skip music. We're not going to touch too much on the soundtrack, and gameplay is going to be sprinkled on in there too. So of course we're going to be discussing that at some point.
But mostly the amazing story.
It's the story, yeah.
And everything about it.
And everything.
So good.
It was the first game was released in 2007, which is known for it, right? The 97, 2007, 2017, the whole like not curse but blessing year.
Yes.
Every single
the opposite of a curse.
So we'll be touching on all things about the game. If you want to visit us on the social media outlets, you're welcome to do so. facebook.com/laglife radio, twitter.com/laglife radio. You can find me on Instagram at @DJ_Marmar, and you can visit the current and most updated website, lagradio.kuci.org. It is completely updated at this time. Every episode is up there, podcastable, listenable. You can check out all the playlists. You can check out the interviews that we've done with a variety of different composers and musicians. And also my reviews of Anime Expo 2018 that I had never gotten around to actually posting.
Yay.
Now they're up there as well. So, and also we are now ad-free. If you haven't been following us on Facebook and such, I announced that we are ad-free. So go and check out lagradio.kuci.org for a free...
You were making money before this?
I wish. WordPress was making money off of this.
Yeah.
And, well, they still made money off of me because I bought the premium. But, hey, you know what? Rather come out of my pockets than...
You guys having to deal with it.
Yeah. You know, it drags down the experience. But yeah, feel free to check that out at any time. But we're going to just jump right into it. Usually we would break here for some music and kind of set the stage a little bit. But because we are so limited on time,
we're marathoning this thing.
We are marathoning. I marathoned. You guys marathon the games?
Yeah.
I had mentioned like the first time I played the game or like beat the game, I did it two other times after that.
Right.
Like, just play through the whole game again, because it was that good, in my opinion. Portal 2 I'm talking about, not Portal 1.
Yes, same with me. Okay. Like, throughout the years since I got it, I would have random urges to play it again. And so, when the opportunity brought up again, I just powered through it.
Yeah.
For sure.
And then even after playing it again this time, I'm like, man, I want to play it again. Like, not to do, like, a speed run or anything, just to experience it again. It's just, like, really, it's like a ride at Disneyland.
It's well written. That's the best way I can explain it. Yeah, just kind of the flow is
the cinematic, like, feel of it and everything.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves.
I know.
Definitely. We're going to have to talk about some of the history and development. Where did the games come from first? So, first off, there was a group of students at DigiPen University, a game design, game kind of tech university, and they were working on a 2005 game called Narbacular Drop. And this game caught the attention of one of the, I think just one of the people who works at Valve, one of the heads at Valve, and basically brought them in and said, like, hey, let's take a look at this game. And apparently, I guess Gaben himself, Gabe Newell, the president of Valve, saw this and on the spot hired them. It was just like,
he knew.
But this is this is something really cool and really unique, and you're with us now. And so the DigiPen students, I think that I heard somewhere that just for 20-25 minutes in the parking lot of Valve, they were just like all giddy because they are now working for this major, major, well-known publisher of some of the best games ever made. So Portal 1 was actually, well, it was released in 2007, October 2007. It only took about 2.5 years for them to make, but they had a team of 10 people, and 10 people only, basically.
Wow.
Yeah, it's very small.
It was a big indie game.
It was a big indie game. Even though it was with Valve, it was still a very, it was a very small team, which is pretty cool because they can just kind of keep that communication. I think there's some benefits to having a smaller group. So, but originally, the game was developed without a story at all. The whole thing about Narbacular Drop, the game that they created while they were at DigiPen, it was this concept that basically grew into Portal. It was where, did you guys see any of the gameplay of that
game? A long time ago. I didn't see it recently.
No, I don't think I recall this.
I feel like it was kind of a...
almost looked like fantasy themed,
right? It was fantasy themed. It was, there were these narrow hallways everywhere, and you would place these like entryway gates or whatever through the hallways, so that you could go, I think not even that you could go between the hallways very easily, but instead some sort of ball or something could go through. So it kind of acted as this portal thing, but it was just like you just set it into the wall very instantaneously, kind of Minecraft-y. So it wasn't this fire or something at the wall and it creates it. So it was very different. But it was still the same general concept as, of course, what would become Portal. So originally they just had this game with focus on the gameplay. So this was this interesting concept they were able to make happen in a 3D space. So when they started getting people to play test it, it was like, wow, this plays really neat. This is nothing like I've ever played before. But what is the point of all these test chambers? What are we working towards? Well,
how can
here?
We make a story based off of these puzzles and doing that, make it more engaging?
Right. Yes. Yeah. I guess in theory, they could have gone in a totally different route with the Portal system and tried to make some sort of competitive shooter, like an Unreal Tournament or something. I don't know. I guess they could have, because I think that'd be pretty neat to have this kind of Portal gun in a massive kind of scale team-based combat, which we'll touch on also. They kind of did try competitive Portal at a later point. But yeah, instead they decided they wanted to make a puzzle game, but a first-person puzzle game, which is really interesting. So yeah, so they decided at that point that they would need to create a story around this really neat gameplay element. Now, at the beginning of the Portal development process, they said that they sat down as a group to decide what kind of school of philosophy that they wanted to base their game on. Like, that's how deep they wanted to get into this. They didn't just want to make, like, a very bare-bones story. They knew that they were working with Valve. They knew that the Valve was known for these intricate stories. They wanted to get something that kind of connected to maybe the Valve universe, so they worked alongside the Half-Life writer at the time to get it set in there very loosely. But when they were talking about schools of philosophy and everything, basically they sat in silence for 15 minutes or so, and then someone mentioned that a lot of people like cake. And this is where the cake concept came from in Portal. So if you've ever played the game, hopefully those who are listening have.
Even if you haven't played the game, you've heard.
Actually, yeah, yeah. That's how well-known this meme, I guess, is. But the whole cake concept in Portal, and that the cake is a lie. Or is it? It was a lie. But the cake thing came from this conversation about philosophy, and, well, we're just going to make, I guess, a philosophy out of cake. So according to Kim Swift, who is the one who first kind of spearheaded, I think, the cake idea and a lot of the writing and character development, I think. The cake specifically that is used in the game is a Black Forest cake, interestingly, that she thought looked very much like a recent Regent Bakery and Cafe in Redmond, Washington, which is, I think, where they were working near. And thus, you can also find as an Easter egg in the game the recipe to that cake. Did you guys notice that?
I remember hearing about it. I don't know if I found it, but
I think it was only this playthrough that I noticed it. But if you look at any of the computers after you get into the escape part of the game,
Yeah,
any of the computers, there's all this code that kind of like trickles through, and you start to see like flour or eggs, right? And it's just kind of all broken up. It's real interesting.
Interesting,
yeah,
okay.
It was interesting. But yeah, so the game itself, very barren, very clinical, right? These test chambers are clean.
Sterile,
right?
Yeah.
It's this medical kind of feeling in there. And originally, it was not that way. Okay, if you look at any of the previous development kind of pictures and videos of Portal before it was fully released, you'll see that the elements in the game was actually really kind of dingy, kind of gross, grimy. It was
Half-Life-ish.
It was exactly Half-Life-ish. And the reason why is because that they were using assets from Half-Life.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Placeholders.
Straight up. And I don't even know if it was necessarily even placeholders, too. It was when they were first hired on, the team was said, okay, do what you're doing now, but make it in Source. And so they just took whatever from
whatever they had.
Yeah, exactly. And the cube.
Source is the engine, by the way, for those who don't understand.
Oh, yes. Thank you for that.
It's the engine that, I don't know, I guess they started with Half-Life 2. Or was it also like way back at Counter-Strike? And I think it was after that. It was after Half-Life. I think it was Half-Life 2 when Source was like the engine. And that was also on TF2 and all the Orange Box games, pretty much. Even to Portal 2. I think they used Source 1.
Left 4 Dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of I think that's the Valve way.
It's the physics engine or whatever.
Right.
For those.
So yeah. So Source. So they started building it in Source and it looked just like a Half-Life game, basically. So at that point they figured when they were doing this playtesting with this Half-Life-y looking gross kind of concept, they found that a lot of the players were trying to solve these puzzles using the environmental elements that they had built into the game. And they didn't want that because people were just like wasting a bunch of time. Even instead of trying to solve the puzzle kind of very directly, it was leading to a whole bunch of time lost and just, I mean, it's fun to play around and kind of, yeah, I mean, even in the final game, you've got the security cameras, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can fire portals at them. Doesn't do anything. Doesn't do anything.
But does give you an achievement if you get all of them, but.
True. There is that. But when it comes to actually solving the puzzle itself, there's never anything that has to do with the security cameras. But beyond that, there's nothing really to shoot the portals at besides just trying to figure out the puzzle. But yeah, so they decided we need to try and lead the player in a more direct route or else they're just going to get kind of frustrated and try and figure out these weird ways around that are just never going to solve it. Which kind of leads me to something I was going to ask you guys about. What was the longest amount of time you think you sat at a single puzzle in either Portal game?
I mean, since I already played them, I'm trying to think of way back when I started them. Probably 20-ish, 30-ish minutes.
At a single puzzle?
Yeah.
I would say about the same the first time around and then subsequent ones, but I still forget those puzzles like a year or two, maybe up to 15 minutes before like, oh, wait, no, I'm dumb.
I think
just right away.
Like this playthrough, I understood or I tried to figure out or I don't know, my train of thought was a lot better because I was like, okay, this is the end goal. This button does this, whatever. So I need to do this, and then I kind of worked in reverse, and so it made more sense to me, I guess, this time as opposed to like, oh, I'll just like you know, put something there and see what comes of it. So I my thought process was different this time. So I was a lot faster with stuff.
These days I was a lot more logical with my thinking than like when you first play it out and just trying anything to either break it or
It's like funny you should mention that the one puzzle, at least in the first Portal, that stumped me for a time, this playthrough at least. It was one where, I don't even know if I can describe it very well. So there was like the ball of energy that goes through
those
the field.
Ones were, yeah.
And it bounces off of like an angled wall.
Yeah,
and
I remember that one.
Off of it. Yeah. And you're
supposed
to get
it. So it goes through the dematerialization zone or whatever.
Yep.
Where you cannot, like once you go through that area, all your portals disappear.
Right.
So
right.
It makes it kind of difficult.
Right, exactly. And that one stumped me. And even this playthrough, I didn't figure it out. I just was shooting crap everywhere. And eventually it came through and I was, yes, all right, I get to go through. But while you guys were discussing this and you mentioned working backwards, I now realize in my head how it works and where you're supposed to put the puzzle. So now I'm going to go back to it and I'm going to see if the way that I'm thinking, because if you fire, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's not exactly easy to explain on the radio, but thank you. Thank you.
It also reminds me of one co-op level me and Brandon were stuck on for, I think, about half an hour or two. And so there was like two levels to it. One required to use the glass cube to direct the laser to activate just one part, to open one door to get to the next stage. And then from there, you have to launch yourself to a button to temporarily open the door to let the other guy in. And we're trying to figure out how to get the other guy to over. And we're just thinking about, dude, there has to be something for us to be able to push back in it, back forth, not thinking that we can actually go back and grab the glass box that we used from the previous level to launch it into the button.
The button, yeah. And to keep it.
And so, like, the minute Brandon said, if there's another thing we could use, I was like, oh, I'm so dumb. I made a portal, turned around, grabbed the box, and just
there just it is. It.
That's what's fun about the game, though, is that a lot of the time when you figure it out, you're like, oh my gosh, I got it.
Right.
And so it's satisfying, it's so and also satisfying. Like, oh man, I'm so dumb.
That's a sign of a good puzzle. I think that there are certain puzzle games that
if you feel frustrated after you beat it, then it's not done well.
No, or if the solution is not satisfying and it's just something that seems so random and you would never have thought of it if you didn't Google it or something, that's not a good puzzle game. So the stuff like the Professor Layton games, I think those ones are well done because you're frustrated trying to figure it out, and then when you get it, then it feels good. It's not just like, I got cheated out of this for the past 30, 40 minutes or whatever. I was crying over the game.
And they did a lot of playtesting with this game, too. I listened to the commentary. The first game has a good amount of commentary. The second game has barely any, which is really disappointing. You'd expect there's a lot of spots that I would expect to hear more about, like maybe the voice actors talking about stuff. I don't think there's any voice acting commentary in Portal 2 at all, which is disappointing.
True.
But yeah, they talked about how, like, they playtested and saw how people would go for certain things, so they changed the level to kind of bring their eyes to certain areas and influence them, or blocking certain things that people would, you know, do to completely bypass a puzzle. So
great point.
They did a lot of playtesting to make sure everything was good.
Great point. Yeah. One of the things that they talked about in not just the commentary, but also, and this is kind of where it goes to the Portal 2 thing, what they didn't have in Portal 2 developer commentary, they supplemented with their game developers conference panel, which you can watch online.
I need to see that,
Watch that. Okay. It's an hour. It's actually 40 minutes.
I think I remember seeing a post-mortem thing about Portal a long time ago, but I'd want to watch it again.
Oh, yeah. Definitely recommend they talk primarily, I think, about Portal 2. But,
nice.
During that, they talk about how a big, big problem in game design, and it still continues, still exists, is how do you lead a player's eyes up? Because they are just not...
Right.
There's nothing really. So that's why they would design the color scheme. And I recall one particular puzzle in the first Portal that in the corner, there's a kind of like a stack of boxes, and at the top is the weighted cube. Not the companion cube, but weighted cube.
They used a lot of lighting to lead players' eyes.
Exactly.
Which is nice.
Yep. Lighting, smart, just some way. At one point, they even were tempted to, because there was a particular one in Portal 2 that you needed to shoot in just like one particular area, but you had to, of course, look up. Yeah. And they even considered having a sign that just said,
look up.
Look up. Yeah. Which is like a big no-no.
But it would work so well.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that right now, too.
So they did actually do that, but they didn't do the sign as like a look up. They had a little, somewhere nearby, it was kind of like a tongue-in-cheek sort of joke of in case of implosion, look directly at implosion or something. And it was something
good.
Like that. So always very clever. Always very clever. But with regards to, we were talking about kind of the environmental elements and such, a lot of the time spent making the first Portal game, it took about 2.5 years for them to develop it, over two of those years was not spent creating the puzzles and test chambers themselves. That was already something that they had decided on. But much of that time was just trying to get that art design down, get that art style down, the overall feel, the overall appearance, all of that. So a lot of that time was just kind of refining that. And you can see, if you get to look online at any sort of the videos, you'll see the transition from that Half-Life sort of look slowly into what would become more and more of the final product. So yeah, the 2005 version of Portal, very different from the 2007 version. And then the 2005 version, very different from like the super, super ahead of time betas or whatever.
Uh-huh.
I forget what it was called. There was a name for like one of the Portal demos or something.
I forgot about that too.
Yeah, it was.
I know what you're talking
it
about,
has some though. Sort of name, but yeah, very, very different. Now we talked about how they needed a story, right? They needed to add a story, But it's not just enough to have a decent story. You have to have a decent antagonist. And so here comes the dawning of GLaDOS, right? Or GLaDOS. GLaDOS or GLaDOS? What do you guys say?
I don't know. Did they ever say it in there? I guess they... I guess Wheatley does, maybe. But he has an accent, so. I've always said GLaDOS, like OS.
Sure.
But it's like GLaDOS, operating system. So.
Right. Or DOS.
Exactly. Right? So it could be GLaDOS, yeah.
I don't know. Makes sense. What do you say, Henry?
I just use just whatever comes out, so it's just GLaDOS.
GLaDOS. Okay, okay. Yeah. All right. That's fair. Yeah, just go with the flow. Don't overthink it. It's kind of like when you're a kid or something and they tell you your assignment is to, like, tell your parents to tie their shoes and don't give them any other instructions. See, like, which shoe that they tie first or something.
Yeah.
Or one of the, yeah, just, I don't know. Just, we'll see what happens.
Yep.
It's interesting. So, yeah, once GLaDOS was thrown into the story, a lot was changed. So the ending was no longer going to be just about escaping the facility, because that was kind of what they had come up with at that point in the first portal. It was like, all right, we need to get out of the facility, because that's just kind of the natural progression of things. But instead, it becomes about also facing down GLaDOS herself, which her original kind of concept, her visual design, in the final product, we've got this kind of hanging structure.
Yeah.
With the what's it called, the cores on her, right?
You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the one of the earlier designs of her, she was kind of like a core coming up from the ground on this little teeny tiny string kind of sticking out, and then above her was all of these kind of orbs, and they were all almost like drones or something. They were all kind of like equidistant from one another, and they formed this three-dimensional cube. Uh-huh. And you would have to shoot it. The final level originally was the one where in the first game, you've got the sentries on multiple different levels, and you've got this kind of, it's a square room, huge square room, very, very tall, and there's sentries in different, like, areas on each of the corners and whatnot, and there's, like, a trench area that you get to run around through. That was originally the final level in the first game, and in the middle was this weird-looking GLaDOS cube thing, and you're supposed to try and redirect the rockets and sentries and such, to her as that. But of course, her final battle became much, much more simple, because they found that really you don't need to have that super crazy complex puzzle the last thing. You just need to give a sense of urgency. And that's why they added in the neurotoxin thing. And here's like a countdown timer. It's very slow. You've got tons of time. Really, you're not in any rush, but it feels like it's at the player.
Yeah, it's a really nice illusion. And it also kind of... combines all the stuff you learn in the game to beat her as well.
Right, exactly. Now, speaking of GLaDOS herself, if you didn't know this, the original trailer for the game debuted on EA's stage, actually. This was like a, whoa, what the heck happened here? Gaben himself, president and co-founder of Valve, he walks out onto the EA stage, and he presents the orange box at this point for EA at one of the E3s. I forget which one. Might have been 05. Well, no. Probably it was like...
06 or 07?
Could be, yeah.
The game came out in 2007, but...
Yeah, I don't think it would be 2007, but probably like 5 or 6. But he walks out. They play a trailer for Portal, which immediately grabs a lot of the people in the games industry's attention, because it's so different from anything they've ever seen before at that point.
Well, and this is also with Half-Life 2.
True.
So it was Gabe announcing another Half-Life.
Pretty much,
does not happen anymore.
We know. They can't count to three.
Nope.
Yeah. So
Ricochet 3.
During the trailer of Portal, you hear the first time ever, Ellen McLain, who's the voice actress of GLaDOS. But interestingly enough, before that trailer was debuted, Ellen McLain herself had only joined the crew a few weeks prior.
Wow.
So it was very, very close. So they were able to get her to record very quickly for this trailer and throw that out at E3. But prior to the trailer debuting, the voice of GLaDOS was actually an AT&T text-to-speech program named Crystal.
Nice.
How about that? So
That's impressive. Yeah. There's a whole lot of voice work in Portal 1 even that they were able to like pump that out so quickly. That's awesome.
Yeah. It is really interesting.
And processed it too, because there's a lot of processing going on with her voice.
Right. This is true. Yeah. It's not just your straight voice. There's filters and stuff.
You got Melodyne, which is an auto-tune thing. You can like change that. Her format shifting, so it sounds higher than it is. Like, there's lots of stuff going on. It's pretty easy to do and then get it done with, but yeah, all that stuff and the turrets and stuff as well. So right. It's a lot of stuff that it's cool that they rushed out into and they did a good job of it too.
Oh yeah. The turrets originally were actually Half-Life assets as well. There were voices or some sort of like
That would make sense.
Yep. Yeah, just mechanical sound.
But eventually they found that they wanted to give more character to them and so we've got the "Are you still there?" sort of voice.
Pays off.
So good. Now here's a little fun fact as well. Before the game was fully released, the first animation graphic that they used for the portals themselves, picture of Christopher Reeves in Superman outfit.
Okay. Did not know that.
I have no
idea.
There we go.
Can I get this?
That's what Mar was looking for.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I don't know what to make. With the portal design, actually, over time you can see how the portal itself, the graphic changes if you looked at any YouTube videos and such of the development cycle. But how it changes, they did have to change it for the final design because they had to actually dumb it down because they found that the Xbox 360 was running out of VRAM. And so the final portal design is not as cool as it should have been.
Because
of that reason, interestingly. I know.
Thanks, jeez. Microsoft.
Consoles!
Yeah. They did the same thing in one of the commentary nodes for Portal 2. They were talking about the gel, I guess it was.
Yeah.
The gel physics. Mm-hmm. Like they had to kind of dumb down so it would be able to work on Xbox and the Sony PlayStation 3, I think, at the time.
Mm.
And so, again, another one of those, well, it got restricted because of consoles kind of deals.
Yep.
But it came out looking good.
Yeah.
I think both games, like the Portal and everything, is like not noticeable at all at that time. Like it wasn't like, oh, that's kind of stupid.
Yeah.
It was
exactly
good.
It still looks pretty decent. Portal 2, like the shading and lighting and all that too, looks still very, very good. Now, after the game was released, or actually even before the game was released, just before the game was released, in fact, there was a group of individuals named We Create Stuff, very appropriately titled. They're a fan group that was following the development of Portal, and they made a Flash version kind of recreating the concepts, and it was a 2D side-scrolling sort of thing, and they called it Portal the Flash version. So you can actually visit that still to this day. It is online. It is, I think it's like portal.wecreatestuff.com or something like that. But totally free. Check it out. And it's this different way to experience Portal. But what was interesting about it is that the team at Valve saw them doing this, these fans putting
and
out
they sent them a cease and desist.
Of course, yeah. like Nintendo, of course. No, they did not take the Nintendo route. In fact, instead they said, we're going to buy your maps from you.
Nice.
And we're going to put them into the game. We're going to add them as an expansion map pack exclusively for the Xbox 360.
Oh, that's why I never played them.
Yeah, exactly. Well, interesting. However, this kind of goes into my next point. So previously, it was available only on the Xbox in, of course, glorious low-res 720p with frame rate drops and everything until just about a year and a half ago from now.
Oh.
There was a group of Valve enthusiasts known as the Valve News Network, that is led by a Tyler McVicker. You can find him on YouTube as well. But him and a few of his other compatriots who are very, very big fans of Valve and all things Valve, they found at some point leaked assets from the Portal Still Alive Xbox arcade game that was released. They were able to, with the help of another individual not originally part of the team, convert those files into actually readable files, because otherwise they were like proprietary Xbox-designed files, which is really tricky. And they were able to reconstruct the entire Portal Still Alive for PC access. Wow. So now you can play the Portal Still Alive levels for free, of course.
Cool.
So cool. That's
good to know.
I love this, like the fan... This is a thing, because... We were talking in a previous episode about how you can data mine for so much, right? We're talking, I think it's the Smash episode.
Yeah.
And how it spoils so much. But at the same time, you now have these modding communities that come up and are able to replace certain assets with other ones and just make such a crazy, you know, sort of different take on a world.
Yep.
It reminds me of, I think it was Skyrim, right? Like a single kid worked on an entire continent or something that he made. And like... Bethesda. Bethesda caught note of this and was able to pick it up and support him further. And like they hired him on to work with them now. So now he works at Bethesda for being a fan who just modded stuff.
Yep.
It's something that would have never been possible if we didn't have the system where we have now people trying to kind of data mine or kind of deconstruct a game and see how it works. It's really interesting. Now, kind of discussed about a lot about Portal. You guys find anything Portal you want to touch on that I missed?
I guess we could talk a little bit about the story. I mean, it starts off as you're just in this test chamber, and you kind of learn, you're just kind of woke up in this. And I like this whole aspect of Portal. Both Portal 1 and Portal 2 did this, where it's kind of like, I forgot what it's called, but like the Plato thing, the philosophy thing, where it's like you are looking at shadows and...
Oh, yeah.
Well, I forgot what that's called, but...
Yeah, it's something in a cave.
Yeah, so you see these shadow puppets, and then once you go around and you can see what's creating those shadow puppets, and then you can never go back to it. So it's kind of like that, where you're just in this box, kind of like a mouse in a maze kind of deal, and then you eventually get down to an incinerator, and GLaDOS is trying to kill you, but you find you can portal out of it and kind of escape and go behind the scenes, and that's when the game kind of starts instead of ends, and it just kind of opens up into this whole, okay, this is like a big twist kind of thing, which I really appreciate with the story. And then you end up kind of getting revenge and killing her, so it's kind of a basic story, but Portal 2 kind of does a similar thing as well, which I wouldn't have expected, but in a much more cinematic
right,
it's just like they didn't pull the stops for that. Or they pulled, I guess, the opposite. They pulled out all the stops.
They pulled out the
for
stops.
That, yeah.
Yes. I don't get that saying very...
I know. That's why I screwed up on it.
But yeah, the story is relatively basic. That's absolutely true. It's kind of...
It was good at this time. I really like the whole... And I don't normally like this... I don't know. I like the whole kind of sterile environment of it, where it's almost... too shiny, where it's kind of fake, and it kind of like you can see its flaws, which ends up happening in the game, and you see like all like the rusty areas and stuff. But I liked that it was very kind of faux futuristic, even though it was kind of like, oh, okay, no, this is just kind of a facade. And again, they took that and went even further with that on Portal 2, but it was a really cool kind of futuristic concept in the design and everything of all these chambers and everything.
Oh, yeah. How long ago did you beat it, Henry? The first time.
The first time?
Was it release?
Maybe. I think it was a couple of years after release.
Okay. I got the orange box right on release. It was, I think, the week or maybe 2 days before my birthday. And so I got it, and I didn't even play Half-Life 2 at that point. I just played... Oh, no, I guess Orange Box wasn't Half-Life 2. Orange Box was Episode 1 and 2. Half-Life 2 came out, I think, in 2005-ish? No, 2003 or 4? It came out a while ago.
It was 5 games total. Half-Life 2, Episode 1, Episode 2, TF2. Portal.
But Half-Life 2 had already been out at that point, what I'm saying. It was Episode 1 and 2. But anyway, yeah, I just went right into Portal because I was just so, like, that concept seems really cool. And so, yeah, I played it pretty soon, and... Even like, because I was a club DJ before I was a radio DJ, and then I had a gig in Arizona like 2 days, from, I think, from that point. And so I made an intro using GLaDOS's voice right when the game came out. And someone actually recognized it when I played it. So that was really cool. I was really into that game like as soon as it came out.
Jeez.
And I didn't even play Portal 2. This is skipping ahead, but I didn't even play Portal 2 until maybe, I think, 2 or 3 years after it came out, which is surprising because that's like one of my favorite games now since I had played it.
Yeah, that is surprising. Well, okay, so it's not so much a question for Alex then, because he played it like right away. But for Henry, did you get spoiled to the story at all?
I mean, you would see random stuff on the internet now and then again, like, you know, again, the cake is lying memes and stuff, but I don't think I was too spoiled about the story about it.
Okay, so you don't recall...
Like the misdirect and...
Yeah, that stuff I hadn't really seen.
The whole, get thrown into the incinerator and the whole finding the rat man dens or whatever.
Right, yeah, I didn't...
Okay, that's cool.
You got to enjoy it fully then.
Yeah, because that's the problem. This is something that we can touch on in a future episode as well. But the problem with being a patient gamer is voiding those spoilers, voiding those like the plague. Because, man, people get into that hype train mentality and start just spilling things. Or even if after the hype train is already gone and taken away, and then suddenly people feel like it's safe to start talking about spoilers because it's been X amount of months since release or whatever.
It's tough also. Like when you play a game and you really enjoy it and you want someone else, or even a movie or a show, and you want someone else to talk to with about it, and the only thing you can do is just like, you have to play this or you have to watch this, and just annoy them until they don't want to do it. And then a few years down the line, then they do it and you can actually talk about it. But yeah, it's a weird phenomena that there's no real good solution for.
Oh, yeah. So the end of the first game really interestingly, so it has two different endings, right? It has two different endings. Original ending of Portal, which you probably remember because you played it in 2007, as did I. The original ending of Portal, you defeat GLaDOS, you get thrown outside of the Aperture Science facility right into the parking lot, and you just lay there on the ground. Chell lays there on the ground, her head kind of, her vision slanted, and pieces of GLaDOS fly around on fire and then fade to black. And that's it. In 2010, they patched the ending to the Portal on PC, at least. They patched the ending so that when that happens, she gets flying outside, lands, same thing, fiery GLaDOS pieces everywhere, and then she gets slowly dragged backwards.
Right. And oh my gosh, I didn't even realize those were two different endings.
Right, and the voice of a different robot comes on, which says they are the party escort bot, and drags her to, quote-unquote, the party, which is back to Aperture Science, I guess, for the cake, I assume.
Oh, shoot.
So, yeah, there are actually two different endings. So that's Portal, but Portal 2. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about this.
Now
so,
let's get serious.
There's no way first to talk about Portal 2 without mentioning F-Stop. So this ill-fated, perhaps one day it'll be more than vaporware game, F-Stop. Basically, after Portal 1 and the Orange Box was released, the Valve team was split up. Gabe wanted them to try and figure out some new concepts for some titles. One of those concepts was so entertaining, so novel, that Gabe and himself had said, I want this to be the next Portal 2. Get to work. And so they did.
You do what Gaben says.
You do what Gaben says.
If he hires you, you take that job.
That's right. And so originally they started working on this game, this concept, this product called F-Stop. And it would have had Cave Johnson as the main antagonist. Cave Johnson, of course, being a character in Portal 2 in the final version as well. But he would have been the main antagonist. It would have taken place during the 1980s, and it would have been all about a robot uprising. So how kind of the Aperture Science of back then got to where it is in Portal 1.
So Cave Johnson wasn't a Valve-created... No, I guess it was character.
Oh, yeah.
It just not related to the Half-Life universe at the time, or was it?
It was.
Okay.
It was, because in the first Portal game, there is one mention of Black Mesa that I found,
yeah,
at least.
Yeah.
It was like one mention. So it was always placed in the...
F-Stop was?
F-Stop would also have been, yeah, it would have been before, this would have been kind of early Aperture Science before they started.
So wait, F-Stop, oh, I see, because of the whole other like camera kind of terms. But
right, yep.
So F-Stop was going to be a Aperture Science themed kind of thing.
It would have been Aperture Science before the whole GLaDOS taking over, killing everyone with neurotoxins sort of thing. Yes.
I see.
Now, in order to make room for this concept of theirs, they actually had to cut out Chell because it was in the past. They cut out GLaDOS because GLaDOS wasn't online until a future year. And they cut out the entire concept of portals.
Oh.
And they replaced it with whatever F-Stop was about. Whatever F-Stop's mechanic was that Gabe was just like, this is what I want.
Oh,
but okay. That's the thing. This really cool concept, very well received. All the playtesting, very, very good. However, the feedback was, this isn't Portal. This is not a Portal. You can't call this Portal 2 because this is not, you're not working with portals. So they brought back the stuff that they'd cut. They brought back Chell. They brought back GLaDOS. They brought back the portals. And they said, we're just going to put in all these other things, expand on them, light bridges, the paint thing, all the different puzzles.
So what features did F-Stop have before all that stuff?
We still don't know. It is being kept tightly under wraps. We, to this day, we do not know
it
what
was Half-Life 3.
It was Half-Life 3. We have no idea to this day, but this is because, in theory, one day Valve will return to making video games, and they want to really use this concept, whatever it was. Now, there are theories. They think that there were some pictures that were leaked at some point of some concept designs and stuff, and there were pictures of the same room twice, but one of them was lighter than the other. And so people were theorizing that the mechanic in this game was controlling light itself.
Oh, man.
That would make sense with the title
F-Stop.
Of the title. Yeah.
Exactly. But
that's
again,
awesome.
No one is totally certain except for Valve. So maybe one day.
Oh, man. I didn't know about all this.
It's going to remain in the Valve vaults.
I know.
Yeah. I think that means forever because Valve has no intention.
Right alongside.
until we stop purchasing games on Steam, Valve will have no reason to make games.
Yep. Yeah, feels bad. You know how much that guy's worth? A lot. I would say that.
No, yeah.
I can't say a number on the air.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Quite a bit.
Quite a bit. It's
he's like the Bill Gates of video games, yeah. I would imagine.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. All right, so originally, you start the game in the relaxation vault, in the concept, at least, that was made of the game. I don't think the second game started in the relaxation vault, right? Like, you later on visit it?
Relaxation vault's what?
That's where Chell started in the first portal.
Oh, yeah, no, you end up in there later, yeah.
Later on you visit, yeah. The original version of F-Stop
started the same way.
It started kind of the same, except the relaxation vault itself was like you were on this island in the middle of the ocean, tiny island, and all of a sudden these walls build themselves up around you, and slowly the sand starts to disappear, and the water around you starts to get sucked away and vacuumed into the ground, and everything becomes the walls, the glass walls again, the steel walls of the
that's a good
facility itself, right?
Surprised they didn't use something like that.
It's a great open. And then the room itself starts to move on a track, and you get pulled through the facility. So that was the original start to F-Stop and what would eventually become Portal 2, of course. Now, one of the things that the developers found as a tricky thing to navigate was that the first Portal, basically like 80% or so of the game, was just tutorial. It was just teaching the player the different mechanics with each and every one of the test chambers. So they found it a challenge to make Portal 2 both accessible to new players while also not being boring to returning fans. And this is always an issue, I think. So you don't want to alienate the new fans. You don't want it to only be returning fans, because otherwise your fan base is never going to grow. There's no possible way. So you always have to think of it kind of from a business marketing perspective. So yeah, they had to try and think about what they can do. Now, one of the things that they learned while trying to market this towards not just returning players but new ones too, they had to think about logic. So of course you're going to think about logic some. One of the things that did not make logical sense in this game, though, and that they decided to keep, was the elevator rooms. If you notice, the elevator rooms in the first Portal game, pretty bare bones basic. Second Portal game elevator rooms, they've got these giant massive screens. They're so nice. Why? How would that? It doesn't make sense. Why would they be so much nicer in Portal 2 when everything else is just run down?
That's true. I didn't think about that.
It doesn't make sense. But in playtesting, they learned players don't care.
Yeah, I didn't even notice till right now.
They don't care. Exactly. It doesn't matter. So there are certain things that you can just kind of overlook.
That's so weird. Yeah.
Always be playtesting. That is what I think that one of the key takeaways from this episode for
Portal 1. Oh, yeah, seriously.
Always be playtesting and listening to and
this
following
their
eyes.
This is why you get focus groups on everything, not even just games. You need to get other opinions and, you need to get out of your group, your kind of echo chamber of ideas, and have other people kind of get a fresh idea on that. Even with music, like if you're creating music or any type of creativity thing.
Oh, yeah, definitely. When it comes to that topic, though, I think this kind of works really well. I didn't realize this until later on. There was a competitive mode of Portal for Portal 2 that was in development. Competitive Portal. Okay.
Oh, man.
It was called Portal Combat.
That would have been amazing if that came out.
I don't know why I never thought about
Portal, that. Portal Combat. And so the gameplay itself was focused around these cubes, I guess, that you would be using to send to your opponent, and they would frag enemies. And there was also some sort of like soccer aspect too. Some of the people were calling it football, or kind of like a soccer football sort of element. Basically, they found that they thought it was going to be great, but it turned out to be actually really confusing and not fun. And this is, again, where the focus groups come in. They watched videos of the players and looked at their faces. And when you look at their faces in these competitive modes, it did not look like a good time. But when you compare it to where they then, after they cut this and they started putting their focus into the engaging co-op experience, which we know now, of course, as totally different than the single player experience, right? They, again, looked at the feedback from the players, and they saw smiles. And it didn't matter if the players were seated right next to each other playing together. It doesn't matter if they were in different rooms and they didn't even have voice communication with one another. The smiles, that was the key that led them into putting more into the co-op versus this competitive mode. Wheatley. How do we feel about Wheatley?
I love Wheatley.
You love Wheatley.
Yeah, I think like the first time I played the game, it was just like I didn't know anything about the game really, other than the ending song, because I'd heard that one.
Okay.
But yeah, I went in no concept, and they start you off. We'll get to this in the story section, but you start off in this like kind of fake hotel room, and it's just like, again, it's kind of like the first game where you're kind of led by the game, and you kind of don't know what's going on, and you're just like, everything's kind of covered, and you have to, yeah, a lot of illusions going on. Mm-hmm. And so it was just a huge, I think, shift in tone from the first game, or really any other Valve game at that point. Wheatley's character, so and also Stephen Merchant's good. So
Stephen Merchant, yeah, that's right.
He was the voice actor of Wheatley.
Correct. Now, before it was Stephen Merchant, though, they used one of the developers actually of the game, and he was. It's interesting because they used his voice for Wheatley in like the demo, I think it was, or the trailer or something. And then when the final, you know, the final product came out, it was a different voice. And everyone loved Wheatley's voice, but there was always that small subsection. There's always
a small subsection of players
who were just like...
I like the original Portal 2.
Exactly. And they were people who still to this day want there to be a DLC of the of the developer who voiced Wheatley.
I want
Wheatley.
The developer voice pack. Give me it back.
For free, of course. We don't want to pay for it. But yeah, of course, that guy, I forget his name, unfortunately, but he didn't record those lines, so there's never going to be that pack. But yeah, that's another thing. Another thing that they learned from this development cycle was you just can't please anyone. There is no way.
You just got to do the best you can.
You got to have him come back and do some ADR.
Yeah,
get those extra lines just for the fans.
You got it. And before it was the developer guy that they had voice a little bit of it, it was actually originally intended to be Richard Ayoade, who is known for playing Moss from the IT Crowd. But there were some scheduling conflicts that kept him from doing so.
Or Dark Place. That was the first place I saw him, which was an amazing show, by the way.
Dark Place.
I think it's like, I forgot what his name is. It's some fictional artist's or author's name, Dark Place, like something Meringi's Dark Place.
Oh, okay.
It was on Adult Swim for a bit. But anyway, yeah, that's the first time I saw him, and it was amazing. But he's also very, very good in the IT Crowd.
Oh, yes.
And he would have been great as Wheatley, too.
Sure.
Honestly, his voice, oh man, now I kind of want to hear that.
You just want to hear what it's like, right?
Because his voice is so distinctive.
Oh, yes. But yeah, Wheatley, what did you think, Henry?
Was an interesting chap. I really liked him.
Interesting
I really,
chap.
Really liked him.
So, of course, he becomes the ultimate antagonist of the game.
He has, I mean, honestly, I don't know. Like, even Stephen Merchant specifically, like, the delivery is perfect.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Like, the voice work in that game is like there would be nothing that I would change about it, because it was such a huge contrast from the first game. Like I said, just all you hear is the robotic voices. That's it. And then you hear someone more naturally human. I mean, you hear this kind of new male announcer guy, PA guy,
right.
But he's still kind of robotic. But then you hear Wheatley, who is a personality core, and he's like, it sounds like a normal person. And and then later on you hear Cave Johnson and stuff. So it's just. It's, yeah, so much more world in it.
Now, originally, Wheatley was not added to be the main antagonist, but instead he was added to, one, keep the training portion in the beginning of the game interesting. Having a companion tended to help players get through that portion that might have been kind of a little bit of a chore otherwise, but also was there to help establish the tone of the game, because the very different visual style of 2-1, the playtesters weren't totally sure if this game was supposed to be more of a horror sort of thing, because of all the overgrowth and the dark and the
Had a really dark tone.
Yeah. So what direction they were going with? So they decided Wheatley is going to be the character who we're going to bring in to kind of lighten things up a little bit, give a little bit of a different tone, give a good mood, and definitely.
That's something I didn't even notice too. Is that whole like what I really appreciate? This is kind of going off topic, but. It'll come back around. What I appreciate about Metroid Prime is the isolation, or even the Metroid series, is the isolation of you're just by yourself and you have no other friend, or really. Metroid Prime 3 changed that, and it kind of disappointed me that it was like you have a base of commands you're talking to, and so it didn't really have that loneliness. Meanwhile, Portal 1 was completely, they're playing the whole game completely alone. You have one like robot that's against you, and then Portal 2... change that up. You're not alone. You're with someone, and you kind of feel like a companionship. But I didn't feel annoyed by that, or like kind of like, oh, this like taking away a lot of the appeal of the first game. So they implemented like a co-op, not a co-op, but like another character that's helping you along pretty well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now the reflection gel, or I should say, this was something that was not in the final game, I think, right? Reflection gel, adhesion gel. Okay?
Yeah.
These were things that they originally developed because they thought it'd be really interesting to have players like walk up and down the walls and have this totally different. I mean, you can do so much more with puzzles if you're thinking not just ground-based, right? Or like in the air, if you're walking on walls and changing direction entirely. However, again, playtest, it was making the players sick. There was a lot of motion sickness going on here, and so this was cut. But I think that would have been a pretty neat concept to have.
Well, I kind of want to go through the story briefly just so we can touch on what these parts in this game go for or go with. I know we're probably done, almost pretty much done with the gameplay footage or gameplay section of the show. But yeah, so you start off kind of, how do you even like summarize the story? But you start off realizing that you've been in capture for many years.
Many years.
Like in stasis in this little kind of faux hotel room. And then Wheatley tries to break you out. You end up crashing into kind of the old Aperture Science area. Everything's all overgrown, which I love that whole concept. Everything's moving too. Like there's tons of scripted animation and everything feels alive as like, I don't know. It's, I gush too much about this game, but you, GLaDOS, as she wakes up, like things start coming back to life and you can kind of see the world like is evolving based on that or going back to how it was. So the environment is really well done. And then, man, there's so much. You end up like activating her through Wheatley or whatever. And then he ends up taking over her body and ends up getting this kind of evil drive or whatever based on being hooked up there. And so then he kind of banishes you and GLaDOS. You end up falling even further down beneath the earth and where Aperture Science is, and you end up going through the entire history of Aperture Science, which to me is my favorite part. Chapter 6 and 7 are just the best part of that game for me because it's good all the way up to that point. You get like so much more like lore because you go through the entire turret manufacturing process.
Right.
They even have an animation of it being constructed and packaged. They even talked about on the commentary that they had a section where you could see it like the after it gets packaged, it gets opened up and then thrown away to kind of reinforce how wasteful Aperture Science is and how like they make the most redundant things super complex and like even like the tubes that send trash around. It's like super wasteful right. And all this stuff.
Oh yeah,
just there's so much character in this game. Anyway, so you go down, you go through the entire history of Aperture Science all the way from the 50s when it started as like an asbestos and salt company because it was made in like the salt mines of Michigan. So that's where Aperture started. And then he was, it was operated, I guess, or founded by Cave Johnson,
yeah,
who was just really into trying to like do these crazy experiments to try to find something that works, which ended up, you know, portals ended up coming from Aperture Science. But you kind of go through the history, and in that you also you kind of get the old technology of Aperture Science, which is the different gels. So these were all based off of another DigiPen game called Tag the Power of Paint, which had different colored paint that you could use to do different effects. And I bring this up at the point that you were talking about with the gameplay stuff because there were three different paints. I can't remember which color. Well, I have it right here. The green paint would let you. Oh shoot. Oh, here we go. The green paint was like the blue paint in Portal 2, where it would allow you to jump from it or like bounce on it. Or also horizontally, you could kind of gain momentum and go forward and do stuff like that. The red paint would let you gain momentum. So similar to the orange paint in Portal 2, where it would just let you go super fast and do all that stuff. Then there was blue paint, which is what sounds like what you were talking about, which was also a concept in, or it sounds like it was going to be part of Portal 2, which would allow you to walk on walls
and stuff. Okay.
So that kind of explains a lot that I just wanted to kind of implement all the different paint types in that. But yeah, eventually you go up through the what was it, 50s to the 70s to like late 80s when he's kind of, and he and Cave Johnson is all these recordings, so it's implemented in the game is so well, where it's just like these automatic recordings that have been there and through the ages, and end up finding GLaDOS who's hooked to a potato for energy, and it's there's so much stuff going on here. You end up getting back up there and then taking out revenge on Wheatley after going through some of his mashed together test chambers and stuff.
Right.
So that brings us to the I guess the ending portion of the
basically, yeah. Just pretty much left is just discussing the ending. Well, for one, they were originally intending to have alternate endings. They were going to have a number of different ones. So based on if you had died like in the first 2 minutes or something, there was going to be some sort of puzzle where you could die in the first 2 minutes. That would have its own ending.
Oh.
Or there would have been an ending that would have sent you to space in a different way.
All right.
Yeah, right, because that's kind of part of the... Well, that's the thing, is that they extracted some of the good ideas from the endings that they didn't get to implement.
I see.
And they put them all in this one, right?
Yeah, exactly. So they found there was a lot of good ideas for some endings, but they also... They became so ambitious with it that they thought, well, we want to have endings here, here, and here, but what's going to be a good ending? And they were afraid they were going to run out of good ideas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that and just, it was a lot of work to implement all of that. So they said, we're just going to wrap it up in a good way. And this is, of course, what resulted in the moon.
So space. Throughout, again, after the gels, you end up getting to a spot where Cave Johnson talks about taking moon dust and experimenting with it.
Right.
Found out that you can create portals on moon dust. There's a section where you're kind of using portals to spray more of this moon gel, I guess, over the surface to create portals onto. And so you kind of learn from that the technique at the end on how to kill Wheatley after using bombs on him and stuff. I forgot what ends up happening.
So you get pinned down trying to push the failsafe
or
the thing by Wheatley, and that causes the roof to open up.
That's right.
And the moon shows, and that's the moment.
Sparkles, yeah.
The light bulb hits your head, and you go, oh, they talked about that in one of the
it's a moon. There must be. Yeah, and so you shoot it. Yeah. And they even said in the commentary, too, where it's like they gave a delay because they wanted to make the physics more likely that if you're shooting a portal at the moon, it's not going to instantly show
right.
up.
No, that makes sense.
So it takes a bit for it to land there, and then Wheatley gets sucked out, and you also get sucked out as well, but somehow GLaDOS saves you. So that's the ending that we got.
And then I think that at some point Wheatley says that he wishes that
at the very, very, very end, post credits,
right, the post credits, and he said he would be sorry for it, right?
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah, he apologized for what he'd done.
But the way they did his character is just so good because, and even in the a lot of the commentary is talking about that kind of progression of his character, in that they wanted to make him like he's still friendly, but then when he gets evil, he also is still a little bit dumb, so he's relatable and not just completely mean. Also, the relationship with GLaDOS and how she just completely berates you the entire game because you killed her for the first time. But then she's kind of partnering with you, and they had to tone it down because having her stuck as a potato on your portal gun was just obnoxious, and people just were just not having it. And so they had to tone her down and make her more relatable and stuff. So a lot of stuff that they had to go through.
That's a good point with the GLaDOS thing is when they were developing the second game, they had to think with just about everything that you do in the game, it needs to further your relationship with GLaDOS. That was what was at the forefront of their minds when developing a lot of the different story elements and stuff, is how is this getting us to feel closer to GLaDOS, because we don't want her to be just this antagonist anymore.
Yeah.
So yeah, there is a lot. And this is kind of reminiscent of creation of games like Dragon Age, the creation of books, TV shows. You don't just make what's in the final product. You make a entire world,
right?
And then you pick and choose, you cherry pick, so that there's so much more still to work with. Yeah, that happened here too. There is so much intricate thought in every last little detail.
Yeah.
And when asked if they still have enough in them for a Portal 3, they said, we'll
see.
Maybe we have nothing to announce at this time.
If there's another tech demo that we see that could be reskinned for Portal, then maybe.
Maybe. F-stop. But yeah, Man, there is so much. Massive props to the DigiPen students and then eventual Valve employees.
Yeah, definitely.
And Ellen McLean and Merchant and everyone
it's
that
worked.
It's just
one of those games where, like, and I don't even care for first-person shooters that much at all, but it's just the cinematicness and feel of this game. We didn't even talk about the music, too. The music for both the games, I guess especially two, where different spots will bring different, like, stuff. Like, if you're going on jump platforms and it'll, like, play a little thing depending on how far you're into the puzzle or just the music as in general. It's just very atmospheric. So I wouldn't say it's hardly music, but...
The sound design, this is really good.
Yeah, the in-game music is much more effective if you listen to it with the game or as playing the game as opposed to just like as a soundtrack.
Sure.
So it's a lot tied in more.
Yeah.
But yeah, the whole like lore, again, the one thing I love about what makes me love games more so, or I guess certain games more so than other games, is the lore and story building or world building of the game. And this game did that where it went into the past of this universe and kind of showed like where GLaDOS might have been influenced from, because
her origins.
Yeah. Rakeem Johnson's assistant was
Carolyn.
And which was also voiced by
Ellen McLean.
Ellen McLean, yeah. But then you eventually find out that she must have been implanted in a way, because in some of the voice recordings, he says, like, I'm going to have Carolyn take over this place after I'm gone and stuff. So
she's sort of like the OS with the spirit of Cave Johnson, but with the consciousness of Caroline.
There's just much detail in the story that it makes you want to learn more about it, which, you know, this is how you get a huge fandom, because you have these people that are like, okay, now I want to know, like, the process of, like, was his dying wish to create this AI that's like in all the personality cores to make this AI. Like, it's just so interesting. And I like it, honestly, more than the Half-Life series.
More than the Half-Life series? Whoa.
Because I like that big combination words. The dark comedy kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's like, I'm not sure whether I should laugh or be freaked out by this. Like, that kind of surreal, uncanny kind of feeling. My favorite games are like those.
I didn't know there was a comic.
Oh, yeah.
That takes place between the two games.
Huh.
Starring Ratman.
Yeah, I heard about that.
I did not know that either.
Dr. Ratman. Yeah, so if you're wondering how it is that Chell... Because when you're doing the first game, when you're playing the first game, not doing the first game, when you're playing the first game... and you're going through some of the underbelly of the Aperture Science Facility, you're seeing some signs here and there that say, over here, and there's an arrow, right? That was being written in real time, quote-unquote, by Dr. Ratman, who was the one that made those dens that had like the he's a lie and GLaDOS is always watching you and all that stuff that he was writing, kind of just these writings of a madman sort of thing alongside empty cans of beans and whatnot. So if you want to know more background, go and check out the comic book. I forget what it's actually called, but it does take place between Portal 1 and 2, but also kind of concurrently with Portal 1, so that you can see how it is that Chell gets from being dragged by the party Asquare actually being a Wogan and being able to get free of that facility and all that. So crazy stuff. Great game. Fantastic game. As we've talked about in previous episodes, don't like to put any sort of scoring system to it, but it is a legendary title for a reason. So
I don't like giving scores either, because there's so many factors to bring. It's like, I don't know, it's like scoring movies, I guess. So many different reasons. But this is next to, like, I can't really compare it. But it's one of the games I recommend to people because of just how, I don't know. It's one of those games where I could recommend it to someone like a movie, because it's so cinematic in that, like, I'm trying to think of the way to word this. It's difficult to word it, but it's one of those things that can only exist as a game.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you did it as a movie, you wouldn't have any control. You don't have much investment that way. And you don't get that enjoyment from solving puzzles. So you get that kind of adrenaline rush. And so it's one of those things, I think, that makes games and art a different type of art form as opposed to music or movies, because it's something that can only be done as a game.
Right.
In that way that it was, and satisfying.
Funny you should mention... the Portal movie. Originally, there was going to be a Portal movie, actually, and it was J.J. Abrams who was going to be working.
I think I remember this.
I barely remember, like, the back of my head.
It was going to be a thing. I don't think it ever will.
I don't think so either. But
I would be okay with it since Valve doesn't seem like it. I'd much rather want Portal 3, but...
Of course.
If they were not getting that, I would be fine with Gaiman just saying, hey, we need to do this. Doing his usual... Need to make this into Portal 3. Maybe he hasn't gotten that. That's probably why we haven't seen a Portal 3, because we haven't gotten the Gaiman saying.
I think it's time.
Yeah, no, like doing right. Like seeing someone work on a game and saying that needs to be Portal 3.
Right.
Because he did that with 1 and 2.
Yeah.
I guess technically.
Yeah.
2, but yeah.
That's true. Maybe one day
we need more DigiPen students to influence Gaiman.
Please. Well. We're kind of out of time because we are so abbreviated this with this episode. Do we want to talk anything more about the story elements?
It's hard to put into words. I mean, I've tried to gush about it too much, but it's just one of those things. I highly recommend everyone find a chance to play it because it's just, I don't know. I can't think of any other game that's like.
Right. The progression, the story. Personality of all the characters and environments in this game is just top notch. Can't really explain it very well either.
Yeah, even explaining the story, it was so truncated, but it's just, I guess the best way to explain it is it's like going through a Disneyland ride where there's so much character, like there's so much to look around and you can interact with and see and like details, and like even when you get down to the very bottom of the salt mines and you just see how large everything is, and or even like behind the scenes of the test chambers and you just see like all this open space and all these different panels and stuff, it's just they put so much work and detail into this, it makes you feel like you're part of this world. And it wouldn't work because it's, you know, the portal stuff would just make you go crazy, but I would love to see, or at least have the environment accessible in a VR format to kind of be in that area to kind of get that feeling. But it's so well done that it doesn't need any VR to feel that way. It's so immersive. So I highly recommend the game.
There actually was a Portal VR.
Yes. It was called The Lab, I think.
It was. There was another one as well.
Oh.
It took place on the moon. It was never released to the public.
Oh.
Yeah, I was trying to find something Portal related, but couldn't find other than The Lab.
Yeah, yeah. There was a Portal, the moon, and you worked with like crushing moon rocks and stuff and everything. And yeah, it's not seen any sort of commercial release. Probably never will,
yeah.
As usual. But maybe one day, Portal VR, Portal 3.
Oh, man. Yeah. I can imagine.
I would
imagine a lot of people would just shoot up and down and just watch you go up and down.
Oh,
and
that's all they
would
do. God, yeah. You'd get so sick, so probably. Quick. I don't know. So just like,
yep.
VR it's got its own set of issues. Maybe one day we'll cover a VR game. We'll see.
I never played VR in my life, so.
Well, it's time.
You guys got to try.
Yeah.
I got to sit. You guys got to come over one of these days.
Yep.
My body's ready. All right, well, that's going to just about wrap up episode 33 this evening. We're going to be back on next episode, but I'm going to have something special. So I can't...
Is it the first episode of the quarter?
No, it'll be the final episode of the quarter. Wow. I think we get one... Yeah, I think we get one more. Yeah, we do. We get it at the end of the month. I think it's like the 27th.
Oh.
So we're going to be covering one final episode. It will not be on a game. It'll be something else. But I can't say yet what. But if you want to check us out on our social media outlets...
This is the first time we didn't like announce something in a couple weeks in advance, so this is special.
I know, it is special. Facebook.com and Twitter.com/LagLifeRadio. You can find me there. Instagram is at DJ_MarMar. You can find out the main website, lagradio.kuci.org. And with that, thank you, gentlemen. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for having this as one of the episodes, because I was wanting to play this game for a while and talk about it.
Happy to have you. Thank you for bringing your pleasure, your passion, and and yeah, all of the background and every little bit of your...
And yours as well, because I learned a lot about the game I didn't know about tonight.
Oh, well, you're welcome, sir. All right. Well, we'll be back in the future. Please tune in next time. KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. Again, my name is Marmar the Mid-Boss. I've been joined by Alex and Henry, and we are Lag Radio.